Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. Welcome to the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Julian Ng, and today is the last Thursday of the month, and that means it's Ringgit Ringin. And today we have Lauren Siow, Head of Financial Planning at VKA Wealth Planners, joining us and standing by to answer your personal financial issues. You can call us at 03-7710-9000 or WhatsApp us at 0162019000. Also tweet us at BFM Radio. Lawrence, welcome
morning.
To the show.
Morning,
how have you
Julian.
Been?
Welcome. Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you for inviting us.
Okay. So what's been going on over the last week or so is a few things that might or might not shake the personal finance world. One is the floating of the petrol prices. And immediately, we are also seeing the petrol prices going down by about 7%.
What a relief.
In the next week or so, but still very much substantially up from the previous week.
Exactly.
And then the other one is the changes to bankruptcy laws.
Right.
I think there are three main changes. One is automatic discharge from bankruptcy after 3 years.
Yes.
The other one is prevention of bankruptcy actions against social guarantors, and also raising the threshold for the definition of bankruptcy from 30,000 ringgit to 50,000 ringgit. Do you like these new changes?
Well, on your note on the petrol prices weekly evaluation, I was looking at the petrol pump last night. I don't see a queue there, you know, in my area. So maybe it's a sign of relief that it's a great move for the government to do this, because then you reduce the speculation on a monthly basis. You know, people wouldn't try to go and pump in the petrol every weekly. It's quite hazardous, you know. And it promotes perhaps some a little bit of competition, you know, between the petrol dealers and pump dealers, you know. So that will help to, and in fact, going on a weekly basis also help to give a more reflection of what the actual price is actually to
more accurate picture.
More accurate picture. So I think it's more than welcome to do.
Do
this.
You have any clever ideas of how to reduce petrol costs? I mean, the MRT has just come out, and we have things like Uber and Grab right now. Are you in favor of those things?
I wish I would want to say yes to it. There are still a lot of efficiency in this public transport, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I am a firm believer in taking your own bicycle, actually.
Really?
So right in my own home, you know, if I need to go to the bank or I need to, I'll just cycle out. So if that's my worth, 1 cent worth of saving a petrol in a way or
it's
two.
It's actually not a bad idea, because you kill two birds with one stone. You transport yourself and you
that's
exercise
right.
at the same time.
Something like that. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one thing I'll do. If it's not too far, you know, if it's any further, probably I'll get a electric bicycle.
Electric. Well, that kills the exercise objective.
Yes.
What about the bankruptcy changes?
Again, increasing the threshold to 50... I think it's about time, because you know why, in our environment today, you know, the cost of living has gone up so much, you know, and if you still remain at 30, I think the number of bankruptcy that will just continue to spike up and things like that. And in the last couple of years, we know that those who are bankrupt are below 40. Now, what does that actually tell us? You know, when you're below 40, you're starting out to work, you know, you're trying to accumulate your wealth. And some of these people have, are bankrupt because they have have high medical expenses, you know, or they could have, you know, a personal loan that they took, you know, upon themselves, or even credit cards and loans, car loans, things like that. So if you still maintain at 30, I'm afraid, you know, you'll just, keep adding on the statistics of, those who are bankrupt, and that doesn't help the Ministry of Finance manage this as well. Now, on the hindsight of it, you know, increasing the 50 means, if I'm 30 now and I still have 20 to go, I'm safe now, you know. It's like a safety net for those who are already at that threshold. But that doesn't mean I should still accumulate more debts, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the public need to be educated, you know, that in the first place, being a bankrupt is a no good situation to be in.
Yeah. I'm just wondering how much of this bankruptcy is driven by people who start small businesses. Because as we know now, challenging economic situations, which prompt a lot of people to start their
That's
own
right.
small business in addition to their jobs,
right.
just to make ends meet. Will this encourage more people? And
right.
should people start up their own business, small businesses?
Well, they can start up their own businesses. I guess, you know, it comes down to the details and how they want to plan their business plans that gels with their own family financial plans. These two has to come along together. I always advise my client who wants to step out to do their own businesses, think about their own personal financial first, because without that being effective, properly drawn up, you know, it's hard to reflect on what sort of businesses you want to go into and, you know, what you want to achieve from those businesses. You know, sometimes you sometimes you realize that, hey, it's still better, I think, and go back to my own working environment that I still can earn a decent, stable income and you know, help my family, you know, with expenses. So it depends. Now, having said that again, you know, the statistics show that, like I said, less than 40, age 40 are bankrupt. That's where the high risk group is actually.
That's right.
25 to the below 40s. That's why they take a lot of risks, you know, and they think that they can make it. You know, they're very passionate about what they want to do, and they just go try out. And unfortunately, things don't turn out to be the way it is, you see.
For a lot of people.
That's right.
We have Lawrence Xiao in the house. He's head of financial planning at VKA Wealth Planners. And this is Ringgit Ringin, where you can call in with your personal financial issues. 0377 109 000 is the number to call. You can also WhatsApp us at 0162 019 000 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some questions here, Lawrence, from WhatsApp. For example, this guy, he's a fresh grad and he has just started working. And he wants some advice to start investment to generate some income stream.
All right. this is a very common question for anyone who just started working.
Like even I said, on this show, very common question.
Yes, it is. Like I just said, someone who just started working, they are very aggressive, they are very ambitious, they want to do a lot of things at one time, you know. But then again, you know, before you start investing, rule number one, have an emergency fund for yourself before you even start going on that, you know.
What is the nature of that fund? Can you just give us briefly some ideas?
Right. Now, the emergency fund is basically to meet your ends, you know, if in case there's unfortunate events, a simple thing like a tire punctured, you know, you can't get it.
Or getting retrenched, which is very interesting because the government is in the midst of trying to start, coax employers to start this employees insurance scheme that will help people if they're retrenched. But you can start your own immediately by having that emergency fund, right?
Exactly. Now, the minimum emergency fund we're talking about is probably 3 to 6 months of your current salary or your family expenses. You know, you have to accumulate those first. So you got to have the principle of pay myself first before others, you know. Mm-hmm. When you get your first paycheck from your salary, make sure you do that. 10%, 15% of that income goes into my emergency fund.
And after that, after you set
once
up
once you accumulate
fund?
That, once you have that habitual, you know, desire to do that, then you have to look into, all right, now I'm more or less have some funds to buffer in case I want to do investment. You know, and that's where I come in to do my planning when I retire. When I retire 60, today I'm only 25. You know, so, what I want to do and things like that. So all that will come
the
in.
The question right. from this listener, he's saying or she is saying that he or she is a fresh grad. Yes. What do they invest in?
Now, unfortunately for fresh grad, you know, the pay that you get is usually, if you're living in city life, you know, it's very hard to actually to survive. You have to be very prudent with your money you have. Now, perhaps you may start with ten percent of your portfolio is put into investment on a monthly regular basis.
10% of the portfolio.
Oh, sorry, 10% of your income. Okay, that's what I mean. 10% of your income into a portfolio of investment. Okay. A couple of funds which are suitable for your risk appetite.
And this person who's a fresh graduate can afford to take more risk, right?
Yes,
buying
that's right.
into some of the more aggressive investments.
That's right. That's right. Because of the age that is, they're still young now, they can have the ability to withstand some of this risk because, you know, as they grow in their portfolio, there will be times when they are very volatile and they will have negative returns. But it doesn't matter because you're talking about retirement that's 40 years down the line. So you have time to wait and for it to, you know, get back the decent return that you are looking at. So the target return is also very important when you talk about, you know, investing. What is actually your targeted return? Most people will say on 20%.
One day, for some people.
That's right. That's why there's still a lot of those, investment scheme, you know, and that scams that's going around. Yeah, and that's what happens, you know.
But that's not a realistic figure, is what you're suggesting. I mean, the targeted returns should be.
Yeah, they need to draw again, sort of like a retirement plan or a financial plan to gel with what they want to achieve. You see, mm-hmm. you know, and again, comes with the risk appetite that they have. Right.
And can I just ask, because this is a very common question that comes in as well, should one invest in stocks directly or should one buy into funds?
Exactly, Julian. Good question here. Now, if you're investing in stocks, you know, there's a lot of research that you need to put into. Okay. Now, as a fresh graduate, you know, I may not have a lot of savings to start with, you know, to invest in. And you
can't achieve diversification.
If
you're just saving 10%,
that's a few hundred dollars, yeah. in a month. So, how many shares can you buy? You can't really diversify.
And it's very important not to put all your eggs into one basket, right?
Exactly. That's another principle that I will share. Yeah. To have a portfolio of diversification, and in this case for a young person like him, maybe 80%, or you know, could be more aggressive equity based funds. You know, selection of funds, and maybe you know 10 to 20% would be more on bonds and money market, just to keep things more stable. You know, so yeah, that's good. That's true. You know, we need to do things like dollar cost averaging. You know, to help them go through the volatilities.
You're listening to Ringgit & Sense, and today is Ringgit Ringin, where we are answering your personal financial issues. And today we have Lawrence Siao, Head of Financial Planning at VKA Wealth Planners. Please keep your questions coming in. We'll be back with more questions after this. BFM 89.9. You're listening to Ringgit & Sense. I'm Julian Ng, and today is Ringgit Ringin, being the last Thursday of the month. And we're going to answer your personal financial questions. We have Lawrence Siao, Head of Financial Planning at VKA Planners, standing by to answer your question. Call us at 03-7710-9000 or WhatsApp us at 016-201-9000. Also tweet us at BFM Radio. And Lawrence, we have this quite interesting question here. Brian WhatsApped us to say that he is a commission-based worker and his pay is quite erratic. Some months he will earn 3,000 bucks and other months it's above 7,000 ringgit. And this year, he's going to have to pay about 6,000 ringgit in income taxes based on an income of about 90,000 a year. And his company doesn't pay EPF or SOXO. So I think this is a multifaceted question. One is, do you have any ideas on what to do with taxes, right? Second, how do you deal with erratic income? And thirdly, how do you plan for your retirement if you don't have employers, EPF or SOXO and things like that?
Sounds like a sole proprietor. Yeah, usually a sole proprietor's ability to earn income depends on his or her talents and skills in getting the income. Well, for people like this category, you know, proper financial planning is really required here. What I mean is this: budgeting, cost control, cash flow, all this, have to be really sit down and talk about and drawn down.
Now, Lawrence, before you go on to answer some of the other aspects, when you mentioned sole prop, right, is that the most efficient tax structure for an individual? Because on the one hand, they can minus off all the expenses, right? And there are many expenses that are given by the government.
Right.
But there is also the Sinaran Berhad structure, which is supposedly more saves you more taxes than the sole prop.
Yeah. Well, once your income bracket hit, you know, the highest bracket, you know, the sole propriety, income tax is not efficient anymore. And that's why you need to probably put a Sinaran Berhad in to cut down those to a corporate tax level and rather than individual tax level, right? So, you know, so based on that understanding, you know, if you're a sole proprietor, then, you know, like I said, constant monitoring of your expenses is important because you don't know what's your next monthly, income going to be like. You can do a projection, right? But that projection will come with your effort and, you know, that you take to build those businesses that you're doing. So while you're doing all that, you know, segregate your business income, or rather your business expenses from your own personal income. Because a lot of the time, sole proprietors tend to mix up their business income with their personal income, and they don't know what's coming in and out of pocket. That's the whole problem, you know.
Yeah.
You got to have a segregation of your income that's earning from your business, and that business is going to be taxed for that purpose. And you take home a pay, okay. than to use. That's right.
Now, on to the more fun stuff. How does this person invest and plan for retirement in the absence of EPF and SOXO? SOXO is also a kind of insurance policy as well.
That's right, yeah. Now, even more crucial now because you don't even have any safety nets for your retirement. Yeah. So they need to start right from the beginning, you know, while trying to accumulate their emergency funds, you know, they have to also start something up for themselves, you know, having a very basic insurance, you know, to start out with. And then with that, maybe some of this, you know, basic insurance have some elements of savings for them, you know, two-in-one kind of thing, you know, income, you know, some sort of investment income policy that they can purchase to help them to actually start up some sort of retirement funds. Now, as they go into it, you know, all this can only be done if they plan properly, you know, their business plan, and their own personal financial plan or their family financial plan. Mm-hmm. If you can identify areas that you need to work on, you know, then you work on it. You know, in terms of retirement, you know, that's something that needs to be planned yesterday, not today. You know, so it's very challenging for someone who is sole proprietor. Now, with a fluctuating income that you have, you need to continuously set aside, this is how much I'm going to set aside from retirement, regardless what's the situation.
Okay.
You know?
Lawrence, I got to rush you because the questions
sure.
are
coming.
Rolling in.
That's right.
There are a couple of questions on fixed deposit. What's your view on 60 months FD? I think it's not going to change much, right? But
yes,
this other one from Ao Yong, he's asking whether it's better to buy bond as an alternative to FD without locking in the period. What are the differences in riskiness between bonds and FD?
Well, yeah, and you know, when it comes to FD, you know, government have a certain what I call a PIDM protection towards it. You know, there's an insurance protection over the deposit you put in below 300,000. So you can be assured that regardless of the insolvency of a bank, you know, your deposit in FD is secure.
Mm.
Now, if you put in a bond, it's under what you call a investment, you know,
risk
yeah. as well. So bond may produce a better return, right? It depends on nowadays that, you know, even if you talk about bonds, you know, that classification of it is so wide now, you know.
You mean all the ratings, bond ratings,
bond
AAA,
ratings,
AA,
and the types of bonds.
Yeah.
There are so many types of bonds that's available now. So we need to be careful to find out, you know, what type of bonds is suitable for our clients. In the unit trust umbrella, you can see, you know, 101 of bonds funds there.
Exactly.
Some are doing well, some are not doing well. Why? You know, so it really depends on the pockets of what I call bonds the asset managers are purchasing, you know, the period of time that they're holding, you know.
So what is really taking the world by storm right now is rising interest rates. The US is starting
right.
to rise interest rate, which is good news for yields, but not very good news for the capital value.
That's
so
right.
if these some of these guys who can't invest in equity or stocks because they're so risky, they need income. What should they do about the rising interest rate situation for some of these bond and fixed income requirements?
Well, I mean, you know, the selection of bonds is so important, like I said. I think consistency is everything here. You know, you want a bond fund that's been consistent with what's the performance in the market here. Having said all that, you know, again, diversification is everything. You know,
yes.
if you're going to put 300,000 of your FD 6 months locked up here and you're getting maybe 3%, you know, if the bond can give you an advantage of 1% or 2%, you know, you may want to put half of that into a bond fund and a selection of couple of bonds as well to minimize the risk here.
Mm-hmm. Lawrence, there's this question, very interesting one, right up your alley from Chan, who WhatsApp in. How much does a financial planning service charge? Are all financial planners financially stress-free due to their investment insights and planning skills?
Okay.
So as I say, right up
so
your alley.
So there's two questions here. One is how much do we charge? And the other one is
whether it's stress-free.
Stress-free. Hmm.
I guess nothing is stress-free when you want to plan in detail about your financial future.
That's right.
You got to provide all sorts of documentation and data.
That's right.
And a lot of personal details, actually.
That's right. Now, I guess stress-free is probably not the right word to use here. I guess managing the investment, the strategies that you use to manage the investment is important. What sort of strategies that you are going to acquire through the advice of a financial planner? Are you supportive of it, you know, Chang? Are you clear about it, you know, the strategies that's been, you know, suggested by the financial
planner?
But
you will make it clear for them, right?
That's right. So we need to be clear as to how these strategies can actually work for him, you know, in this case, yeah.
So how much do you charge? Right.
Now, on a that note, there are many ways that we also charge what I call through advice, our advisory fees. That means to say when we draft up a financial plan for our client, where we charge a minimum advisory fees for them. That includes retirement planning, investment planning, and all that.
And what are we talking about? Like how many thousands?
I mean, in the market, we're talking about 3,500
3 to 5,000 or 3,500?
3,500
and above. Yeah, okay.
To start out with. And I mean, we also have we also paid through the other the wrap fees, and also what I call service
what
charges.
What are those for? Yeah.
The service charges are mainly when the investment comes in. You know, there are what I call upfront fees that need to be paid, right? So as a financial planner, we will actually inform our clients that you know, there are actually upfront fees of 5 to 6.5%.
Okay, so if I
so
understand,
we can actually negotiate for the client to reduce these fees, right?
Okay, so if I understand it correctly, yes. You charge separately for advice and for implementation of the plan. Is that right?
Yeah, that's
right.
It's a separate charge. Fees.
Okay.
Yeah, one is before and one is during the execution of the investment. Yeah. Now, during the execution of investment, it's only right to charge the fee at a reasonable rate because if you're going to charge at a maximum fee of 6 to 6.5%. You know, if the fund is going to give you back 5% on that year, you're going to be a negative return. So we got to be able to help our clients to maximize the return and charge a lower front-end fees, right, in return for what I call a trailer or wrap fees where we can charge on advisory on every year. These wrap fees could be ranged from 0.5% to 1%, right? So depending on how the portfolio is performing, you know, we can charge that kind of decent fees for it. Now, that compensation is required, is crucial because that helps us to continually be what I call agilent to our client, to be attentive to our client, you know, in how they are managing their investment.
Fair enough. And right. Chan or any other listeners who want to get more information, you can contact Lawrence or any other financial planners out there for their fee schedule. Make sure that they're approved by the Securities Commission.
That's right.
Thank you very much. That's all the time that we have. Thanks so much for joining us,
thank
Lawrence.
Thank you, Julian, for the invitation.
And also for those who haven't got their questions answered, please don't give up. Call us or write to us again when we have Ring It Ring In next month at the end of the last Thursday of every month. And you've been listening to Ring In Sense, and today we had Lawrence Seow, Head of Financial Planning at VKA Wealth Planners on BFM 89.9.
Ring It and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.